Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast, presented by Coors Light. I'm Mark Schanowski, and today our guests are Kevin Bulldog Anderson, longtime Bulls pre- and post-game producer, now coordinating producer here at NBC Sports Chicago. And our guest joining us by phone, Ricky O'Donnell. You follow him on Twitter. He's a great follow. He writes for SB Nation, does great work on college basketball, the NBA. Now he's even working on high school kids for upcoming draft.
I believe his new nickname is C-Red Ricky.
No.
I think so.
All right, Ricky, we saw your latest piece where you had your top stars from Summer League, and you expanded your top 10 to 11 to include Coby White. What's the story behind that?
Well, I always intended to do 11.
Oh, okay. All right.
I tried to keep them at some odd numbers, but I thought Coby obviously struggled shooting the ball. I think he shot 10% from three-point range. Yeah. During his time in Summer League, his field goal percentage was, I think, 33%. So clearly he did not shoot the ball as well as he did at North Carolina. But in a lot of ways, I think that can be a positive because he did show some signs in other areas of the game. I thought he made some good reads out of the pick and roll. I thought he learned from his mistakes on some turnovers as a passer and as a facilitator from his first few games in Las Vegas to the end of his run. I think he improved over that time span as a decision maker and as a passer out of the pick and roll. I also thought he continued to show his ability as an open floor ball handler, really pushes the pace. That's the one thing Coby White's going to bring to the table immediately from day one as a rookie. I think he's going to get the Bulls offense moving down the court quickly in position to attack when he takes over a point guard. And I think that he even made some crisp rotations defensively. So he didn't shoot the ball well. I think that it's still a small sample. His college numbers will likely be more indicative of the type of shooter that he is. In college, he was a great catch-and-shoot threat, finished in the 92nd percentile in the country on spot-ups as a freshman at North Carolina, hit 35% of his threes. So I think his shooting struggles in Vegas were a little bit of an aberration, and hopefully he can build on some of the positives he showed while he was there.
Ricky, what do you think are realistic expectations for Coby this upcoming season? I mean, clearly we still need to get into training camp and that whole competition regarding the backcourt depth chart's got to play out. But right now, after Summer League, what do you think are realistic expectations for this rookie?
I think he's a developmental player. I don't think that he's going to have a huge impact on the Bulls winning or losing games this year. I think likely Ryan Arcidiacono will be ahead of him in the rotation. If Chris Dunn's still on the team, he's going to be ahead of him in the rotation. So I think you're normally going to see Coby White during blowouts. You might get to see him in some extended run if the Bulls are playing a load management game with any of their other guards. Otherwise, the Bulls just have other guys in the rotation. Otherwise, the Bulls have veterans in the rotation who are going to be ahead of him this year. So I think it's a perfect spot for Coby to be in. He can learn the NBA game, develop his point guard chops a little bit, and he'll still get some run this year, but I don't think he is going to really impact the team's bottom line as a rookie in terms of wins and losses.
So you just said if Chris Dunn is on this roster, what are your – give me your Vegas, since we were just in Summer League for Vegas, give me your Vegas over-under, or more likely of odds he will be on the Bulls come opening night.
Yeah, I tend to think it's unlikely he'll be on the Bulls come opening night. Every time John Paxson has given an interview over this offseason – he stopped short of giving Chris Dunn a vote of confidence. He's openly said that, you know, they are exploring their options with him. If there's a move out there that can improve the team, they'll make it. I think it's no mystery the Bulls need more depth on the wing. You look at Chandler Hutchison's up and down run in Las Vegas during Summer League, and I think having him as the primary backup to Otto Porter is a pretty scary proposition. Hutchison hasn't proved himself at the NBA level at all for a 23-year-old. I thought he was pretty underwhelming in Las Vegas. We know Porter has had some injury problems in the past. The drop-off, if Porter gets hurt, to Chandler Hutchison is just going to be so massive for the Bulls, and that would immediately drain any hopes of making a playoff run this year or any chance at just improving the overall record substantially. So I think if they can move Dunn for a small forward, that's something they would certainly consider. It takes two teams to make a trade, so we'll see if there's a willing partner out there for the Bulls.
Well, before we move on to that position, I got to go back to a couple of things you said about Coby White. First of all, you said load management games for the Bulls. You don't play load management games if you're not a playoff team. And secondly, there's no way that Coby White's going to be behind Ryan Arcidiacono in the rotation. You don't take a kid seventh overall with his skill set and play him behind, you know, an NBA journeyman. I mean, the kid's going to get minutes. I know that coaches always talk about we're not going to give entitlement minutes to a high draft pick. But this kid, with his speed and his ability to change the pace of a game when he comes off the bench, he's got to get 18 to 24 minutes a game, and I got to believe he's going to be ahead of Arcidiacono in the rotation.
Well, if the Bulls are trying to make the playoffs this year, which I think is the goal, I would be surprised. Arcidiacono was pretty good last year. He hit 44% of his threes. He was top five in the NBA in assist-to-turnover ratio. Obviously, he's not going to break anyone down off the dribble. Arcidiacono is also a really weak defensive player. But Coby White, for a 19-year-old, I think the Bulls are viewing him as more of a long-term prospect. Perhaps you will be right, and he'll, you know, win that spot in training camp, and he'll be a guy who's given the Bulls 20 minutes a game. But my impression of him coming into the season that he's likely going to be a developmental guy, which I don't think is the worst-case scenario. I think that in a lot of ways you can groom him behind the scenes. You retain any trade value he has a year or two from now if you want to move him. And if someone gets hurt, if someone needs some rest, he's going to get an opportunity. I think that's definitely going to happen over the course of an 82-game season. So Coby White will get his chance. I just tend to think that he's not going to be a guy who's going to be getting 20 minutes a game, but, you know, we'll see what Jim Boylan does with the rotation once the Bulls get in training camp.
Yeah, we know the Bulls do like Arcidiacono. He could get some minutes at shooting guard because we don't know what Denzel Valentine's situation is with his ankle. Obviously, Blakeney's fallen out of favor. He's not going to figure for minutes. So, yeah, there could be some minutes at two guard. Obviously, Satoransky at 6'7 can play both guard spots, and you know, they've got some flexibility there where they could play two quasi-point guards at the same time. So there will be opportunities perhaps for Arcidiacono to crack the rotation. But, you know, when you draft a kid that highly and the speed that he has, I think he's going to find his way on the court. Let's get back to that small forward thing that Ricky brought up. Hutchison didn't play well in summer league, but you have to remember this was his first full court activity after missing the second half of his rookie season because of the broken foot. And he told reporters in Vegas that he really had only been playing full court basketball for about 3 weeks. So I think there was a serious rust factor that he was working through in summer league. And he did get a little bit better as the games wore on. I think the issue with Hutchison is he's not a floor spacer. He's not a shooter. And I don't think in year two he's all of a sudden going to be shooting a three at any kind of meaningful rate.
Well, the other key part of that, what Ricky just said, is that that position is the only position they didn't really address in either the draft or free agency,
right,
in terms of depth.
Unless Justin Holiday comes back in a Chris Dunn trade.
Which, to be honest, you go back to why haven't they announced the Luke Kornet signing yet?
Right. They're still looking to make another move.
Yeah, they're still looking at another move. And what I think is, more to Ricky's point about Chris Dunn, is I think they are still actively listening and shopping Chris Dunn, hoping to then take that money and either use that money to sign Kornet and then use the room exception for somebody else, or bring in another wing using that free agency money too. So I think there's still a couple things in play. But regarding the drop-off, Ricky's right. The drop-off from what you're going to get from Otto to what Hutch has shown us so far is significant.
Sure.
I'm not overly concerned that we have hit the ceiling of what Hutch can be, but certainly there is if we've got to see Hutch play starters minutes for double-digit games, I think there is a concern there. I think there's going to be an issue.
But that roster's getting pretty crowded, isn't it, Ricky?
Yeah, I think so. Like, Hutchinson played 44 games last year. He averaged 20 minutes a game. He just wasn't good across the board, and it goes beyond shooting. Yes, he was a 28% three-point shooter, but he was also a poor free-throw shooter, only 60% from the foul line. He didn't show anything in terms of playmaking skills or ball-handling ability.
Hey, Stacy, call him Young Pip. Come on now.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of a stretch, but he does look the part, that's for sure. So, you know, he has some physical traits to build on. Good in transition, I think that's really where he can, you know, make a name for himself, at least in his second year right now. Defensively, he really has to carve out his reputation on the defensive end. If I'm Chandler Hutchison, I'm putting my mind to becoming a lockdown defender on the wing, because that would immediately make him a lot more playable than he was last year. Offensively, I think he's a major work in progress. So if the Bulls really are going to move up the standings this year, they need to pray Otto Porter can stay healthy and available and productive.
Ricky, do you see a situation in which we see Zach LaVine get significant minutes at the three?
Yeah, I think that they can do that. Now, they have enough versatility after some of their free agent signings where they can cross-match defensively and give teams some different looks. Thaddeus Young, over the last few years, he's guarded LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, those big, talented wing scorers. I think when you have a guy like that at the four, no matter who you're lining up around him, it just gives you so much more lineup versatility. So that was one of the reasons I think Thaddeus Young, Thomas Satoransky, were great signings, because they just give you versatility in terms of the lineups you can play. Satoransky at 6'7", he can even defend some wings. So it's going to come down to how Boylan wants to play offensively. Is he really going to try to push the pace, shoot a lot of threes? We know the Bulls didn't really do that last season. Boylan will tell you that's because he wanted them to walk before they could run. Well, this year they have a lot more talent, so I think Boylan does have a decent amount of pressure coming into him this season, because this team by no means should be one of the worst in the league anymore as long as they can stay healthy.
Daniel Gafford didn't make your list of top 11 players at Summer League, but he turned a lot of heads. I mean, here's a guy at Arkansas who shot over 60% from the field, mainly because he's a rim runner. Most of his field goal attempts are within a few feet of the basket. But, you know, Pax made the point at the introductory news conference that Gafford is one of these guys who knows who he is and he sticks to his strengths, which is a good thing for a young player to do coming into the league. And it'll be interesting to see how he fits in that center rotation, because he doesn't give you the offensive component that Wendell Carter Jr. does. But, you know, when you go from a Carter Jr. to a Gafford, you're still going to get that same kind of athleticism, guy who can switch out on smaller players, who can block shots, who can run the court. So you don't have to really change your system. Now, if they go to Luke Kornet, then you've got a completely different look at the five, because he's a three-point shooter who's going to play on the perimeter and gives you some rim protection in terms of blocking shots. So there's also going to be an interesting challenge for the coaching staff on how you delve minutes at the five, considering Jim Boylan's also talked about the fact he'd like to see Lauri Markkanen play some center as well.
Yeah, I think all of those are great points. Gafford was really impressive in Las Vegas. I thought about adding him to my list, but you got to draw the line somewhere. There are a lot of good rookies out in Vegas. I think Paxson's point about Gafford, knowing the type of player he is spot on. He's mostly going to be a vertical spacer, a guy who's going to set a screen at the top of the key, dive hard to the basket. He's not anyone who's really a passer on the level of a Wendell Carter Jr. I don't think he's going to be able to make plays for other people the way Carter can, but just in terms of being a run and jump athlete, a dunker, a shot blocker, I do think that he could give the Bulls some decent minutes this year. It's really going to come down to how advanced he is defensively. We know that it's really hard for young big men to grasp the nuances of NBA defense. There's just so much more going on in the NBA than there was at the college level defensively for a big man. So much more to navigate to protect the rim. So I think Gafford is a high floor prospect as a second round pick. Certainly he could make John Paxson and Gar Foreman look good. There's no doubt about it, just by being a guy who can give them, you know, rotation minutes as a backup five, give you some shot blocking and a lob threat on offense. So he looked good in Las Vegas. And, you know, before Las Vegas, I thought he'd likely be spending the majority of his time this year in the G League. That may still be the case, but I think he showed enough in Summer League where, you know, you at least have to give him the opportunity to earn minutes in training camp at the NBA level.
Ricky throwing bouquets to the Bulls front office.
I know. It's amazing.
Mark the tape.
I honestly don't know who this Ricky is that we have on.
Did you call, dial the right number?
Yeah.
This call?
I mean, did we dial C-Red Fred by mistake? Gafford's biggest challenge to me is going to get meaningful minutes, because if you look at the bigs rotation, certainly Carter and Lauri and Kornet and Young are going to be ahead of him in terms of in that rotation. I would not be surprised if, given a healthy roster, see Gafford playing in the Windy City Bulls for, you know, long stretches of time.
Get some time there. I don't think there's any question about it because, as we mentioned, Cornette gives them a different dimension because they've been looking to space the floor. Ideally, you know, you do that with your wing players, but now in today's NBA, if a seven-footer can shoot threes, you're going to go to that. That's going to be a strength for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you just said, Mark, this is going to be a significant year in terms of pressure for Boylan because he's going to have a full training camp for the first time with this team. He's going to have a roster, truly the roster we had hoped all along that maybe Fred Hoiberg was going to get. We now have Jim Boylan is getting. And so he's going to have the chance to run. He's going to have the chance to space the floor a little bit more. And I think you're going to see a lot of mix and match sets out there in which Laurie does get time at the five, in which Thad Young maybe slides down to three. An occasion. So we're going to see a lot of different sets out there that are hopefully going to be very fun to watch for this team. Ricky, in terms of keeping with the Vegas theme, most of the sports books have the team at 30.5 wins for this upcoming season. That seems extremely low to me given the offseason they just had.
Yeah, but last year 28.5 seemed low and then everybody got hurt.
Yeah, so I know.
That's why they always set those things a little bit low to protect themselves.
So in regards to 30.5, do you think that is spot on or do you project them to be several wins higher than that?
I mean, they should hit the over. If they don't hit the over, the season's a massive failure. I think the injury thing is another factor to worry about again this year. I mean, we saw John Paxson at the end of his year press conference basically give this convoluted speech about how if guys are in their building and how they have all the equipment to work out during the offseason in their building, then he doesn't believe they'll get hurt. Well, Wendell Carter got hurt in their building, so obviously that was garbage from the very start. I think that until Markin improves, he can stay healthy and take the next step, that you know, his durability is going to be a major question mark. Zach was durable last year. That was a strong improvement, especially coming off the ACL. But I do think, like any team, the injuries are going to heavily determine their win-loss record. The 30 wins for an over-under is low. I would take the over for the Bulls on that. But, you know, for as positive as we're being about the Bulls right now, I mean, Vegas still knows that this team is going to win somewhere in the 30s. You're not celebrating that too heavily, but what's important for the Bulls is they're at least trending in the right direction after so many years of, you know, making poor decisions in free agency. I think they finally added some smart pieces to the roster that can help improve their record this year.
We're always dealing with recency bias. You know, people look at moves that are made recently and think, oh, those are great moves, and that's going to jump them up in the standings. But, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with people who are saying, oh, the Bulls are going to make the playoffs next year. Well, we all want to see the Bulls make the playoffs. It'd be fantastic. But you have to look at the list of the eight teams that made it last year. Who are they beating out?
Right.
I mean, Orlando didn't do much. They're hoping to get back a healthy Mo Bamba. They signed Al-Farouq Aminu as another front court guy. You know, their point guard is still a position that you worry about. But, you know, I don't see Orlando taking a big dip. Detroit didn't do much. They signed Derrick Rose to add to their backcourt rotation. If they stay healthy with Drummond and Blake Griffin and Reggie Jackson, that's probably a playoff team. So, who are they beating out? I'm asking both of you guys. Who are the Bulls going to edge out to get into that top eight?
Ricky, go ahead first.
I mean, they're competing with the Magic, so you guys can say that I'm being really positive, but it's like beating the Magic is nothing to hang your hat on. Like, the Bulls should do that, and I think people in the media like myself should apply pressure on them to make the playoffs this year, because clearly that's their goal. And
yeah, but you're going to have to win 42, 43 games. Is this team capable of that?
I understand it. It's going to be hard because you look at the Magic. No one on the Bulls is as good as Vucevic. No one on the Bulls is as good as Blake Griffin on the Pistons. So it's going to be a challenge. And first and foremost, they're going to need their guys to be healthy. But I do think the Bulls could potentially compete for the eighth seed. And that should be the goal for the season. They really should be judged on that. It's not going to be easy. They only won 22 games last year. I think the front office thought the team would be much, much better. And the front office will blame the injuries. Well, the Bulls can't even get into training camp without getting one of their starters hurt this year in Wendell Carter. So it's definitely not guaranteed, but I think it is a reasonable goal for them to have after signing Thaddeus Young and Satoransky. I think they could likely get in the eighth seed over the Magic. You know, you think Miami's probably the seventh seed now. I think Indiana's a team that could go down. They're going to be missing Victor Oladipo till at least January. When he comes back, he's probably not going to be himself. coming back from the ACL injury. So there's an opportunity for the Bulls in the Eastern Conference this year. It's going to be on their best players to really take their games to the next level for them to get there. It's on Lauri Markkanen finally becoming a star. To me, he has more to prove than anyone else on the Bulls roster this year. It's on Wendell Carter living up to how good I think he can be as a prospect. And it's on Zach LaVine to continue fleshing out his game and to become a more well-rounded player. They have the talent here this year to at least make a run at Orlando for the eighth seed. Even that's no great accomplishment, but I do think it's a fair goal for them at the beginning of the season.
And Bulldog, before you answer, yeah, we can't forget about Miami either. They didn't make the playoffs last year, but they brought in Jimmy Butler. They still may acquire Chris Paul before the season starts. Granted, their roster skews a little bit old and really top-heavy with bad contracts, but they're still a team that's going to be in that playoff race. So who do you think the Bulls could potentially finish ahead of, including Miami, which didn't make it last year, to make the playoffs?
So let's be realistic about this. If they were to make a 15-game improvement, which is significant and truly incredible to, right, to do that, regardless of injuries and no injuries, that gets you at 37 wins. I think you still can look at a 8th seed getting 39 wins. I don't think necessarily it's going to take finishing at 500 or even getting 42 wins for them to get the eighth seed. I think still 38 or 39 gives you an outside chance to be in there. And you're right. The bottom two teams in the playoff picture in the East are Detroit and Orlando coming off last year. I think the most realistic chance is them leaping Orlando. Certainly Miami has a lot of unknowns. You cannot discount what Jimmy Butler brings to that team. And given his history, Jimmy Butler has always played on mediocre, if not above mediocre, you know, better than average teams. So certainly they're going to be in the playoff picture.
But their roster looks pretty good on paper. You know, Dragic is still there. They've got Winslow, who's a nice young player. They got Bam Adebayo, who's made some growth from his rookie season. You know, they got James Johnson still, who's a reliable veteran. I think that Miami is a team that could equally make the case that, hey, we should make the playoffs.
Sure, absolutely. And so you're looking at essentially, if you consider a healthy Pistons roster, that the Heat, Bulls, and Magic are going to all be vying for that eighth seed in the East. I mean, that's realistic what we're looking at right now in mid-July. I think the Bulls, given a healthy team, are better than those other two. Mm-hmm. And I think they could legitimately and realistically finish with the eighth seed in the East. Now, could they still only finish with 36 wins, 35 wins? Sure. But the idea is that you are playing meaningful basketball in March and through mid-April.
Relevant. That's one of the words John Paxson used, yes, at his season-ending news conference. Obviously, most of the major moves have been made during this very, very busy NBA offseason. So, Ricky and Bulldog, let's have a little bit of fun. Let's look at some teams around the league, and I want to ask you guys if you think they have championship potential. I think we can all agree that the two Los Angeles teams have rosters that are in position to contend. So, let's move down a little bit. Houston. They make the big move. They get Russell Westbrook. It's going to be fascinating to watch Westbrook and James Harden, the old Oklahoma City teammates, rejoin once together again. Two recent MVP guys. Ricky, is that going to work in Houston, or are they going to take a step back?
I think Houston will be a contender. They were going to be very good, even if they didn't make the move for Westbrook. Been one of the best teams in the league the last few years. Still won 53 games last year. I think they gave up way too much for Russ, and that at best he's a slight upgrade over Chris Paul this year, but I still think this team's going to be awesome. Westbrook has never played with this type of shooting around him. Oklahoma City consistently had some of the worst shooters in the league surrounding him on his drives to the basket. So I think, you know, just putting guys like PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon around him is really going to help. I think Houston's a championship contender, but I would put them a cut below the L.A. teams, particularly the Clippers, who stand out to me as the favorite right now.
To me, there are five teams in the West, and the West truly is wide open. There are five teams who have a realistic chance of making it and winning the championship. Houston is one of those teams.
Denver, they were the second seed in the West last year. They re-signed Paul Millsap. They got Jeremy Grant, who had a really good year last year for a draft pick. They're hoping to bring Michael Porter into the rotation. Of course, he got hurt before Summer League, which certainly adds to the evidence that he could be injury-prone throughout his NBA career. Ricky, what do you think about the Nuggets?
I think that they're a dark horse contender. I don't think that there's likely odds that they're going to win the championship, but certainly it's a good team. Jokic, I think, is probably the most underrated player in the league to casual fans. He's no doubt a top-10 player in the NBA to me. Jamal Murray, it's really on him. He's got the contract extension now. Can he add anything else to his game? Can he be more of an impact player defensively? Can he diversify his skill set offensively? Otherwise, I look at Millsap, another year older. They're just going to need someone, maybe Malik Beasley or another young player, Jared Vanderbilt, like you said, Michael Porter Jr., to take the next step. I say that they are on the fringe of contending. They're there with the Jazz in my mind, but not a true contender.
How about those practice pickup games with Michael Porter and Bol Bol wearing injury shirts?
Oh, my God. I know. Like,
what do you think about the Nuggets?
I still like their chances. You know, they're in, for me, they are in that five. They're one of those five teams that has a realistically a good shot of going to the finals. I mean, they have certainly what Ricky just mentioned. If Murray can take another step up this upcoming season, and we all know what we have in Jokic, that absolutely. Denver has everything it takes right now to make that next push.
Everybody's patting the Utah Jazz on the back. They swung the big deal for Mike Conley right before the draft, a veteran point guard who's never made an all-star team but is universally recognized as one of the top 10 point guards in the league. And then they signed Bojan Bogdanovic in free agency, got him away from the Pacers. May have overpaid a little bit, but that gives him another shooter to go with Joe Ingles. They picked up Ed Davis and Jeff Green, Emmanuel Mudiay for the bench. You buying the Jazz, Ricky?
Yeah, I like the Jazz. I'll put the Jazz in that mix. Again, it comes down to your best players. Same thing we can say about the Bulls as Utah. Does Donovan Mitchell have another step in his game? If he can be as good as, let's say, Damian Lillard in his third year in the NBA, then I think Utah is absolutely a championship contender. I put him in the same tier with Denver right now. I would put Denver a little ahead of Utah in terms of teams likely to win the championship because Denver just has clearly the top player in Jokic. But Utah is a team, I think, also on the fringe of the championship conversation.
Jazz has so much depth. I love what they've done this offseason. I love what they have as a team. Outside of certainly Mitchell, they don't have two superstars like certainly L.A. Both L.A. teams are going to have. And I don't know if quite in a seven-game series if they're going to get over either L.A. team. However, they are going to have an amazing regular season, and they've got a true team that is capable of beating anybody.
Portland, kind of rolling the dice now. They've been close the last couple of years with some good playoff runs. They've got the backcourt tandem of Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. They made a risky move, though. They're traded for Hassan Whiteside, whose attitude has followed him, you know, wherever he's gone in terms of being a guy that doesn't seem that interested in playing basketball other than collecting huge paychecks. You know, they've got a team. They re-signed Rodney Hood. They made a trade for Kent Bazemore. Is Portland going to stay near the top of the West, Ricky?
I don't think they're an actual contender. They have the worst wings in the league, pretty much. You look at Rodney Hood, they have Hezonja, who they brought in. They have Bazemore. So I just don't think they have enough on the wing. I mean, those 3-4 positions have really become the most important in the NBA, in my opinion. They really determine the type of team that you are. And while I do like Zach Collins, I think that he is, you know, breakout player of the year type potential for them. They have a big hole at the forward spots once again, and until they shore that up, I think they're on the outside of the title contention picture.
They're still a playoff team, but I think they're like a 7-8 seed in the West playoff team. I don't think you could truly call them a contender. Certainly that backcourt right now entering the year is probably the best backcourt in the league, healthy. I don't see them getting over that hump. I can't see them getting out of the first round, giving who they're going to have to play in the first round.
What do you guys make of Golden State? They bring in D'Angelo Russell. They salvage something out of Kevin Durant going to Brooklyn, but Klay Thompson is going to miss most, if not all, of the season after the ACL tear. They've got some issues in terms of depth. Can Golden State, if Klay Thompson comes back in late February or March, can they be in the playoff mix, Ricky?
I'm going to say Golden State can be in the championship mix. It's obviously going to be difficult for them to get there, but it comes back to the best players again. And Curry, I think, could be the best player in the world this season. I would love to see him try to take a more featured role offensively with Durant out of there this year. I mean, his skill set is enough to average 40 points. He gets the shot attempts. I think Russell there is a little bit of an underrated move for them. Just getting a guy who can play at a near all-star level when you were going to lose Kevin Durant for nothing, I think, is a huge addition. And Draymond Green is still tremendous when he's motivated to be. And when Golden State gets in the playoffs, I think they're going to be really tough if they get the peak version of Draymond and the peak version of Curry.
They're still going to have Draymond, and they're still going to have Steph. Mm-hmm. I mean, any team in the league.
And they know how to win.
And they know how to win, and they still have one of the best coaches in the league. So you put that together, and aside from Klay missing probably until certainly after the All-Star break, March, they still are going to have a very good team. I would still put them in the playoff picture. I'm skeptical on how things are going to work with Russell, Steph, and Klay when Klay comes back. I just don't truly think that dynamic with the three of them is going to be one that they're going to be able to make work in a short amount of time.
Yeah, and even with all the protests from Bob Myers and the Warriors front office about they didn't acquire D'Angelo Russell just to flip him, ultimately that may be what happens. Let's wrap it up by talking quickly about the East. I think we can concede the fact that Philadelphia and Milwaukee are at the top. Are you guys feeling either Boston, Indiana, who am I leaving out, Toronto, as a contender in the East? Ricky, we'll start with you.
No, I don't think so. I think that we're destined for a Milwaukee-Philadelphia Eastern Conference Finals. I think that Milwaukee's the team better equipped to have a gaudy regular season record, but Philly might have the edge in the playoffs. I look at Boston, and the drop-off there from Al Horford to Enes Kanter is just so substantial. Even if they get a slight upgrade out of Kemba from Kyrie, I don't think Boston has enough. Indiana, I definitely don't think has enough after the Oladipo injury. Toronto, no as well. I think they could even be a seller with a lot of their guys on one-year deals. So I think we're headed for Milwaukee, Philadelphia in the East.
I like Philly a lot. I actually like them more than Milwaukee heading this season. I think they... losing Jimmy, what they've done. I think they've got a better team this season than last year. However, don't sleep on Boston for me. I think given the dynamic with Kyrie last season, I don't think it was a healthy one.
Yeah.
And I think Kemba is an upgrade in every way, shape, and form for that team. Certainly, you're not going to have as good a front court as you had last year in Boston, but I think other guys can pull together. I think they're going to be a better team. I just don't know if they can get past Milwaukee or Philly.
I'm calling Milwaukee Clippers in the finals. Bulldog, what about you?
Oof, my gosh, mid-July making that pick. I would say Philly Clippers.
Ricky?
I like Philly Clippers as well.
All right. Well, so we'll check back next June to see which one of us was right. That's your early look at playoff races in the Eastern and Western Conferences. Thanks for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Special thanks to Ricky O'Donnell. Follow all his great work at SB Nation. He does great work at all levels of basketball, so to make sure to follow him on Twitter. Bulldog, we'll be talking again real soon.
Absolutely. And by the way, we talked about Hutchison earlier. Mark Schnauss is going to have a very good Summer League video breakdown of Chandler on our My Teams app and NBCSportsChicago.com.
All right, until next time, so long, everybody.